Welcome to a live stream of the Your Next Mission podcast from the Maneuver Center of Excellence at Fort Benning, Georgia. Proudly brought to you by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
They're veterans and families, and welcome to season two of Your Next Mission podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host from today's show. And we have a great show for you. In fact, we have a wonderful show for you today. We are live right here at Fort Benning, Georgia, and we're going to talk about the Army community. We're going to talk about the Solomon Cup and the premier tank firing that they're going to do right here at Fort Benning, Georgia. And we're going to have a lot of really wonderful guests. Today we're going to introduce my first two guests, Captain Vitino and Captain Jordan. So good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, thank you. Now don't clam up on me. You got to talk to me right now. I'm sure the audience wants to learn quite a bit about you. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself before we get started, ma'am? Let's start with you. And I guess I can call you Captain V, right?
Yeah, Vitino's a little hard.
A little bit. Well, it's not hard, but I screw it up every time. But go ahead.
Okay, so I'm from Bluffton, South Carolina. It's where I was born and raised. In high school, I learned that there was a place there where you could go to school, the Army would pay for it, you could wear a uniform every day, and I was excited about that, so I went to West Point for my college education. I commissioned in 2018 as an armor officer. After that, I went down to Fort Benning here for ABOLIC, did some schools here, and then I PCS'd to Fort Riley, where I met my unit in Poland for about 2 months. After that, I picked up my platoon, got to be with them for about 9 months, went into XO for about a year, and then I came back to Fort Benning, Georgia to be an executive officer over at 194th. And now I currently work for the Chief of Armor as the Armor Branch Proponent Officer.
All right, well, good. It's good. Captain Jordan, about yourself?
Hey, all right, Sergeant Major. So I'm Captain Jordan.
You look a little laid back there.
Oh, I don't know. Hey, that's just my demeanor, Sergeant. But Captain Jordan from Marietta, Georgia, so I'm from the South, been here, career started here. Went to Alabama State University. That's where I received my commission. Commissioned in 2016. Once I commissioned, I, of course, came to Fort Benning, Georgia, and attended ABOLIC in 2017. After completion of ABOLIC, I went over to Fort Stewart, Georgia, Rock of the Marne, send me, 2nd Brigade, where I picked up my platoon. I had a unique opportunity to actually go back. So I ended up picking up the M1A1 tank, which was definitely a different look in
comparison.
You
picked it up?
Not picked up specifically, but I actually trained on M1A1 with my platoon and the company. So we went backwards in comparison to actually training on the M1A2. That year, we conducted a mission in Defender 20 in Poland. Then we had a change of mission due to COVID to the Atlantic Resolve. And then after complete, we moved back home, and I ended up coming back here in 2021. Completed MCCC, CLC, and now I'm currently a troop commander here at a Blackjack Troop in 515 CAF.
Wow. Captain V, we're going to start with her each time, just go back and forth with each one. Can you tell me a little bit about what your daily routine is, I guess?
So my daily routine
is... Hopefully it's not loafing, I guess.
I mean, it's a little different from when I was in ForceCom, being here at TRADOC. My daily routine really just involves talking to cadets in the ROTC programs and at West Point, and educating them on the armor branch and kind of teaching them about the opportunities they have if they branch armor. So that's what I do. And then I also go TDY to travel to different universities and do outreach there as well to kind of get face-to-face contact. And in the summer, I'll be going to cadet summer training multiple times to just really just preach about the armor branch and hopefully convince some people that's a good choice for them.
What's the biggest question people ask you about the armor branch? I mean, the number one question, I guess.
What's it like to fire a tank?
Loud.
That's definitely what they're interested in. That and just kind of like what it's like to be a leader, a platoon leader, what your soldiers expect from you.
Oh, wow. Same question to you. What's a daily routine for you, I mean, in the military?
Yeah, Roger. So my daily routine is to train, mentor, advise our future warriors to be 19 Delta Scouts. They're all trainees. They all have that will in them to fight and become a soldier at the end of the day. And my daily routine is to ensure that they get there. along with my well-trained cadre members, drill sergeants and first sergeant as well.
Yeah, is there, there's a little bit of, this is a question for both of you, there's a little bit of age difference. I guess you're not that old, I guess, but the people that you train are pretty young. I mean, they're 18 or 19 years. Do you find it difficult to get them to understand or exactly what's going on, I guess?
So it can be a little difficult. It's just trying to get them adjusted to the daily life of a soldier. A lot of them come from military backgrounds as well, so those are kind of easy to mentor and adjust to the military lifestyle. But others, some just struggle a little bit sometimes. But after a while, they'll pick it up.
Yeah, they're quick learners, I guess.
Oh, 100% Army.
But you work primarily with officers or non-commissioned officers, both of you, I guess. Both, you work with officers or non-commissioned officers, both?
So I work primarily with non-commissioned officers for my daily routine. It's mostly my drill sergeant. So E6 to E7, even E8s as well. That's my team, and pretty much how we execute a day-to-day mission, we always communicate with each other, and that is my go-to party.
Yeah, ma'am, same question. You work mostly with officers or non-commissioned officers. What do you work with?
Well, the office I work in, I'm lucky enough to where my office mates, it's just me on the officer side, but my office mates are 3 master sergeants and 1 E7, and they just represent the Armor Branch, and they just have a wealth of knowledge, and it's a very cool experience, especially as a young officer, getting to be surrounded by such knowledge, because every day you can hear the good and the bad sides about the branch and just hear them either complain or get really excited about whatever's happening in the Armor Branch. So it's just a wealth of knowledge that I get to experience on a daily basis.
Yeah. I understand. Now, you're studying, Captain Jordan, you're studying to get your master's degree. Is that correct?
I am, sorry, major.
And you're going to what school now?
Troy University.
How do you balance the two? I mean, that's it seemed like a lot of work there.
It is, Army. It's really difficult.
Now, and the other question, I guess, are you married?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You have any children?
Yes, I do.
Okay, 3. Go ahead. Answer the question then.
So, yes, my hands are full on a daily basis. However, the teachers really work with me, so I can definitely tilt my hat to them. They help me, so if I'm busy or if I'm too busy to meet a certain test, they can work with me. They can alter the schedule a little bit, so I'm able to flex more so with my job to make sure I accomplish my mission and my task currently at hand. So it's not too difficult, honestly, because my wife is prior service as well. And she helps me out. She understands the daily taskings.
I guess the question is, who's smarter, you or your wife?
Sorry, Major, I don't want to say that. But I will tell my hat to my wife. She has me.
She has to be. That's a good question.
100%, Sorry, Major. She got me beat.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, again, this is a question for both of you. Somebody said that basic training has changed a lot. You know, I hate to tell you this, but I went to basic training in 1966. And so when you talk about change of the basic training, has it changed a lot since you came into service? And I guess I'll start with you, Captain Jordan, and then we'll go to you and ask the same question.
From my knowledge, being here, it definitely has changed, Sergeant Major. The week, so now we're no longer just a BCT, then AIT. It's comprised as one, so we're an OSET. So we're one station unit training environment. Mm-hmm. So we have those 19 deltas complete their tasks all the way through those 22 weeks of training. Mm-hmm. From my experience, I've been also told as well that it's been split from like Fort Jackson, Fort Sill, other areas. Their training is you do BCT in this area, then you go to another area for AIT portion. But here it's one. It's all comprised as one. So I think that's the biggest change that I've seen thus far, Sergeant Major.
You know, one of the things I hear from a lot of people, I travel around quite a bit, and they always say that that training is not as tough as it was when I was there. Is it? And I'm sure you say the same thing. If I've been in 3 years, that training was tough when I was there. Do you hear the same thing?
Oh, always, Sergeant. that's always going to be a thing. I mean, if we look 5 years down the road right now with the trainees we have now, they'll look at basic training and say, hey, base training is not as tough as it was when I was there. I guess it always depends on the person, honestly, Sergeant Major.
Yeah. How about yourself? Do you think it's, I don't know if you can compare it to anything, can you? I mean.
Well, I know when I was at West Point, all the old grads would say the same stuff, you know. When I was a cadet, it was so much harder. And we had to walk uphill both ways in the snow and, you know, just kind of that, that narrative. Yeah. But the experience I had with basic training, I worked at the HHC company. And we kind of managed the land, like the towers or the gas chamber, those kind of places. And those are all the same things I did when I was going through as a cadet in our version of basic. So I don't know. I think it's probably difficult in its own right.
Yeah.
Do you think Here's another question I heard. Do you think the trainees always talk about people in the divisions? They all talk about the trainees are not as tough and resilient and everything else as they was when they come in. Do you think these trainers are just as good as they've always been, I guess?
I'll disagree on that, Sergeant Major. So our trainees...
You can disagree. I don't care.
When they first come in, Sergeant Major, they're... Of course, when our cadres see them for the first time, they're like, oh, man, I don't know if they'll make it. I don't know. We'll see, though. But at the end of the day, our job is to train and ensure that we get these soldiers to meet the Army standard and ensure that they are ready to fight our nation's wars and our nation's future wars. Today, I believe, at the end of their training, at the end of their 22-week OSET training, I do feel like they will be set to meet that mission set. They are resilient. They will be ready to fight our nation's wars when that time comes. I 100% agree that our soldiers at this current state right now will be ready just due to the fact that the technology changes as well. We have more technology in comparison to soldiers in the past. So we have, EST that wasn't a thing in the past. But however, EST now, we can ensure that the soldier...
Got to tell the audience what EST is.
I do not know currently.
You don't know the acronym.
Time. I can't remember currently at this time. But
that's okay.
It does
I'll bad
help.
Mouth you later. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. But it does help those soldiers prepare for RM. So RM is just pretty much basic rifle marksmanship training. There's RM 1 through 17, and EST helps those soldiers meet those tasks within those RM days, and it helps the soldier prepare for the next task. So I honestly think that they will be ready, and they will be resilient, and they will be ready to fight our nation's wars when that time comes.
May I have the same question to you? I mean, do you think the trainers is good enough now to do what we have to do in the future?
Yeah, I really.
And the reason I reason I ask that question is because I'm always watching TV and I'm listening to news and I talk about Ukraine and Afghanistan and Iraq and all the rest of that stuff. Do you think we adjust training all the time because of that? And I went basic AIT jump school and then straight to Vietnam when I was 18 years old. And I worry about things like that. I mean, I don't know if you guys do or not, but any concerns about that?
Well, I'd agree with what he said. You know, the technology we have now is so different than it was even 10, 20 years ago. So I think the new soldiers coming in are juggling a lot more technology-wise than maybe people had to juggle in the past. And you know, you never know until it's time to know, like, if people are going to be ready. And I think, you know, soldiers have always been soldiers from the beginning of time. And when it's time, like, in the bottom line is you don't want to die and you don't want your battle buddy to die either. So I think, you know, when you're ready, you're ready.
Yeah, that's, I hate to say it, but it's the truth. There's no second chances in our job. You're either number one or you pay with it with your life. And it's really sort of a scary thought. Last question before we take a little bit of a break here. Are you concerned about anything going overseas or Ukraine or all that stuff? I mean, you stay up to the news and all that stuff about the things that are going on. Does any concerns there? I mean, with the things we're doing or things that are going on? Not to get into politics, and it's not politics, it's about training.
Currently, I am not, Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned at all. I know for a fact that the quality that we push out into the force will be ready.
Yeah.
They will be ready 100% and they will answer that call.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you got to have good leaders, and that's what you two are, both leaders in our Army. One last comment now. Who's the biggest Army in the world? You guys know? China. And then I think it's India. And we're number three as our size. But we're different in all the rest of those armies. And what do you think makes us different? Any thought about that?
So,
you already said it, technology.
Technology, Sergeant Major, but I think it's actually hilarious, but how we're different is we have doctrine, and we're supposed to follow doctrine at all times. However, when that first bullet starts flying,
it's all out.
United States Army, we're doing something completely different, and I think that's what makes it hard for other countries to fight us, because they'll read our doctrine and they'll follow it by step, and they're like, oh, they will be here and they will do this. However, we're just like, nah, we're going to do something completely different. It throws it off, just throws their entire plan out the window. So
yeah,
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. How about yourself? We're not the biggest, but what do you think makes the difference here?
I think it's our leadership and our idea of, like, that we're a team of teams, and also the diversity we have in the Army. And I don't think other nations can say the same things. But we have like a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds. And when you get a team made up of people like that, you can do incredible things because you have just like a bunch of different perspectives coming into the fight. So I think that really helps us.
Yeah. Me personally, what I think the biggest difference is the non-commissioned officer corps. I think because we have a tremendous non-commissioned officer corps, they really know exactly what's going on, and they really do a lot of heavy lifting. And you got, you're a young captain, 7 years in the service, I think,
four
years in the service. You had how many years?
I'm coming up on 10.
Coming up on 10. Was you enlisted before?
I was Army.
Okay. So the difference is you're a young captain, but you're going to really just like you talk about your master sergeant, your sergeant first class, you're going to depend on those non-commissioned officers to really assist you a great deal as you go through there. So, but I just personally want to tell you guys, I'm so glad you're in the Army. Of course, I wish I was still in the Army, but I'm too damn old. I need to get out, and they run me out. So we're talking with Captain, Rebecca V and Sergeant First Captain Jordan about things that are coming on here in the United States Army, and I'm proud to do all the things you're doing there, and I'm proud of what you continue to do. If you're watching this podcast and you want to reach out to me, contact me on 844-424-1134 and send me a text, or you can contact me at smedtilly@yournextmission.org, and you know, I'll actually answer you. Also, if you want to send me a message, you know, I'm on YouTube and all the rest of that stuff. You can send me a message on YouTube, and I'll actually, again, ask you to answer your question there. And the other thing I'd like you to do is I'm trying to build a team for your next mission. I want to build a team, have 300,000 to 400,000 service members on our team that do all we can do to help our veteran community all the way through. So I want you to do all you can to follow us and help us out just as much as you can. So we appreciate all you're doing. So carry on this conversation. The what's the number one issue you think the United States Army has right now as far as your perspective?
That's a hard question. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I'm not too sure right now, though, Sergeant Major, honestly.
Number one issue. Maybe the amount of, for me, primarily being inside of the tank, it might not be the biggest issue in the Army, but one of the issues I faced as a leader at the lower level was the amount of information we receive that we have to process at one time. And I think that's always been an issue, is just overstimulus of information and then being able to use it to your advantage.
Yeah, yeah. How about yourself?
I wouldn't say it's for like an Army issue. However, I'll say we don't have enough like to fill positions within the Army. So I think we fall short sometimes. I know in the Force Comm unit, it's always short on personnel. So I wish we had like a more flow of soldiers, or at least civilians, to try to become soldiers. I think that's where we fall short right now. I know sometimes we're in an influx of downsizing. Sometimes we're in an influx of boosting our numbers. However, right now, I know we're short with some positions within Force Comm, which I wish we have the civilians to come to become soldiers to fill those positions.
Yeah. Does your family get involved with any of the things that you're doing? I mean, I don't know. Are you married or NAS, ma'am? Are you married?
I am married, yes.
Yeah. Is your husband in the service also?
He's also an armor officer, yes.
Did you plan that?
it just kind of happened that way.
Did you meet him at West Point?
We did.
All right. So how does your family, your military spouse, get involved with the process of things that you're doing each and every day?
Well, luckily, at least for my spouse, we do similar things every day. So he's currently in the Maneuver Captain's Career Course. So we work in the same building, which is refreshing. And it's cool to have someone who knows exactly what you're going through and knows exactly what's expected and kind of have that sounding board to help you when you have issues.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the Sullivan Cup?
I know something about the I know some things about the Sullivan Cup. I know it's like Tanker Super Bowl.
It's a Tanker Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. It's very exciting.
Do you go out and watch the people shoot out there in the tank?
I haven't been. So my office is partially running it. So I've been really just kind of running around making sure all the events happen. But I know as a young lieutenant, when I was at Fort Riley, it was always my dream to compete in the Sullivan Cup, because that was like you were the best of the best and you were going there to win.
Oh, wow. How about yourself? So you know anything about the Sullivan Cup?
Oh, yeah. Tanker Super Bowl. Always and forever.
Have you ever shot in it?
I have not. I've never competed in a Sergeant Major. However, my old battalion was actually the last winners of the Sullivan Cup, and Sergeant First Class Warner was definitely one of my mentors as well, and also definitely looked up to him as well. Currently out of the 11th ACR, doing great things for our Army right now, Sergeant Major.
Well, what are some of the things you do to motivate soldiers within your organization? I mean, how do you get them motivated, especially when it comes to leadership?
It's a little bit different in this environment. I'm more of a stand. I have to be more standoffish in this environment. That's more so for our drill sergeants that we have down there that's always with them on a day-to-day basis. For myself, I'm not really there for the trainees. However, for my permanent parts, for my drill sergeant, we do have like in-house SFRG. We have barbecues. We come together, have a little camaraderie time every once in a while when we're not on on duty. So I think that's how we pretty much come together and we stay motivated. We talk to each other. If we have any issues, we ensure that we relay it to each other as well, so we can ensure that it's being addressed properly and in a timely manner as well.
Yeah. How about yourself? How do you motivate the soldiers that you're around? Or maybe they motivate you. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Currently, in my current position, I don't have any soldiers. Mm-hmm. But when I was a platoon leader at Fort Riley, I think the biggest thing was just making everybody feel like a valued member of the team. That's like first and foremost, like everyone feels a respected and valued part of the team. And then after that, just because it sucks, like there's times that, you know, being in the motor pool is terrible. Like it's probably my least favorite. The fact that we're in a motor pool right now, it just gives me flashbacks. It's probably my
You don't like being in the motor pool?
I mean, you have to be. It's a necessary evil, but it's definitely not my favorite place to be. You know, I'd rather be somewhere else, but
on the range.
But they really motivate you, because especially the specialists in E5, the younger soldiers, they come in every day and they're just ready to go. And seeing how passionate, especially 19 kilos, that's who I've worked with, how passionate they are about being tankers and the pride they take in their job and getting, like, when you actually get the tank working perfectly and you're able to actually shoot a gunnery and fire off your tank, it's an unmatched feeling.
Yeah. You know, I stayed in the Army 36 years. You think you'll stay that long?
You take it day by day. So maybe in 36 years, I'll be sitting here in a motor pool and loving it. But I'm not sure.
How about yourself?
I'm not sure, Sergeant Major. We'll see.
Well, so what makes you stay in the Army? I mean, what is it? What's the two things or not two? What's the things that make you stay or motivate you to stay in the service?
I think Captain V already spoke on it a little bit, but the soldiers. The soldiers motivate me to stay in, like 100%. Waking up every day to see how motivated they are is my go-to thing. Like that's what keeps me pumped, seeing that they're hyping and excited to be there. And it makes me just like, oh, well, yeah, I'm here. We're here. So that's what keeps me driving and pushing on.
Yeah. It's, you know, of all the things I did when I was in the military, one of the things I just loved was talking to soldiers and motivate them. But I used to do one-handed push-ups. Do you do one-handed push-ups?
Back in the day, you know.
Back in the day.
I mean, I could probably get one good one out for you, Sergeant Major.
Is that right? Well, what do you think about that new physical fitness test that the Army has?
I love it.
Have you taken the test?
I've taken it 7 times already, and I love it.
Did you pass it?
Oh, always. Every single one.
What's the ma'am? Have you taken the test also?
I have, yes.
So I hear people talking about it, how tough it is. You know what? What's so tough about the test?
I think people are used to the APFT, which is your standard, you know, 2 minutes push-up, sit-ups, and the 2 mile run. And then, so that's what the Army was training for. And then they switched to the ACFT, which requires a much different set of tasks. And I think for people, it was just that transition. But then once you practice for it and you actually start training, like for those specific events, like it's not difficult. And when the last one I took in my unit at Fort Riley, that was the first one I took. And it was really cool to watch the company take it together, because everyone was motivating each other and like, oh yeah, you can go for that next rep. Or it was unlike the APFT where everyone just kind of gets in line, mm-hmm. you know, and like you have like 30 people in line, just everyone do push-ups. This, you know, when you do the deadlift or when you do the plank. People are right there motivating you, and it's a really cool like team building event.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. But how about yourself? I mean, you're motivated. You max every one of them. Does all your soldiers max them too?
No, I don't max every single one of them. Some of my soldiers are pretty close to maxing. But yes, it's, I think it's definitely a great change for the Army. Definitely because it shows the. Not just, oh, you can push up, sit up, and run, but it shows the well-rounded soldier. Yeah, that soldier can do all of these things.
Yeah. So the do you have any final thoughts or anything you want to share with the audience about you know, what we're doing or anything you want to say to the audience? Captain B, we'll start with you.
Honestly, for me, when I was a cadet at West Point, the Army branch wasn't open to me until my junior year, and I just...
I got to tell you real quick. I sat on the board that allows females in combat. And when I said on the board, I said, hey, look, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a standard, you meet that standard, I don't care.
Right.
And I think that's the standard. That's the way it should be anyway.
And, you know, I was super excited when I was actually afforded the opportunity to join the Army branch and to be on tanks. And now, you know, if you look at the female population, the numbers are just growing. And I think we have around, like, 250 female armor officers now inside the branch. So it's just been really cool to be part of that integration and to see it grow and just kind of change the branch for the better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. Any final thoughts you guys got? Anything you want to share with the audience about talking to me today? No, anything you want to share with the audience here before we stop here, I guess?
Nothing much. Sergeant Major, was definitely a great opportunity to be here, and I truly appreciate and having the opportunity to speak to you and also having the opportunity to speak on the Army's behalf and the great things that they do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, there's no question. Make sure you tell all your soldiers about what? Your next mission. Follow that as much as you can. How about you? Any final thoughts?
No, just thank you for the opportunity, and hope to just keep learning and growing as a leader.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And I want to say thanks to Rebecca Vatino. I'm going to make sure I get that right. And Captain Trey John Jordan for being with us today. And I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been watching a live stream on Your Next Mission podcast. And please stick around for our next segment, and we're going to have a... You know, Sergeant First Class Travin Craig and 194th Armor Brigade Senior Drill Sergeant and Staff Sergeant Christopher Sorensen, Behavior Health Technician at the Military Advisor Training Academy. So thanks for watching, but now I mean it. Please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're watching a Your Next Mission live stream, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there, veterans and families. And again, I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and your host. And today, again, we're coming to you live at Fort Benning and the Maneuver Center of Excellence. And we have, like I said before, we have a great show, and we're going to talk to some outstanding people. And right now we have the Commandant and the Sergeant Major from the Armor Center right here with me, General Fetley and Sergeant Major Jackson. It's so good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Sergeant Major. It's great to be here.
It's great that I finally got you here. Before we get started, I'm sure the audience wants to hear all about what you guys are doing. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, sir? We'll start with you.
Sure, Sergeant Major. Absolutely. So, you know,
you
my
probably
name is,
wasn't in the Army when I was in the Army, was you?
When did you retire?
I got out in 2004.
Okay, so I came in the Army. I went to basic training in 1988. So we had a little bit of an overlap, I think.
We did, but you was you a... Know, you,
I was like a private in 1988. I got commissioned in 1993. So, you know, just for everyone out there, my name is Tom Felty, and I'm the 53rd Chief of Armor. And I originally hail from New Jersey. So, you know, I grew up in a relatively small town, a very, you know, urban city inside of New Jersey, just outside of Manhattan. born and raised in New Jersey, my dad was in the Army National Guard, and he's kind of he's who encouraged me and gave me that initial little spark to inquire about the Army, and I joined the National Guard in between my junior and senior year of high school.
Wow.
Went off to
Did you join the Guard to get the money? Is that what it was?
No, so in the end, I ended up getting some money from the Guard, but that wasn't the original purpose. The purpose
wasn't much
was,
money.
Yeah, it wasn't much money. Yeah, I think I remember my first paycheck of $747 for a month. Right, was my first paycheck as a private. I really wanted to test out the Army to see if I wanted to make it a career. And so I went off, went to basic training, and I immediately just fell in love with the Army. And I knew that I wanted to at least try active duty out. And so after that, I graduated AIT, and then I went to college at Rutgers University, and got involved in an ROTC. I also was a Division I athlete. I was on the rowing team, and I was a captain of the rowing team for a couple of years.
You should play basketball or something.
Right, that's what they always say about tall people, Sergeant Major. But I grew up, where I grew up, funny enough, in the city, there was no – Sergeant Major and I were just out there doing a hometown recruiting effort about 2 weeks ago. I didn't have any basketball courts around me, so but we had a river, and that's where I learned how to row. And that really began, that kicked it off. Got commissioned in 1993, and never in a million years would I expect to be here as the chief of armor. So that's just a little bit about me, Sergeant Major.
That's good. Sergeant Major, how about yourself?
All right, so I'm originally from Lima, Ohio. For some reason I did
get on tanks. That's a tank planet.
Yeah, there you go.
There
right?
you go. That's tank, probably why
you're here. It's in my blood. It's in my DNA, right? It caught me off guard. It just slid into me. I was smelling the fumes. But, Lima, Ohio, been an Army for a while. I'm married. I like to talk to my wife, and I have three children. But my military career was all based off of I wanted to make decisions for my future, and most of all, I had a son when I was young. So I always said I wanted to be a better father for him than that. And I saw family members like my aunt being in the military, and they made me think about it and think that it could be successful for myself and make me successful. And then I joined the Army, and I got on tanks, and I fell in love with tanks. SMA, and it's just been a love ever since then. It's job to job, place to place, growing family and continuing to grow with the Army all together in one. And I tell you, it's been a phenomenal ride. So I have no complaints.
Did you plan on staying when you came in?
No, SMA. Everybody wants to get out at the first chance.
They say the same thing.
Everybody wants to get out at the first chance. But I tell you, Lieutenant General McKean, he's probably one of the reasons why I'm still in the Army. First time he told me no, he wasn't going to allow me to reenlist to stay at that duty station. He told me it was other things in the Army for me. And I was like, oh, no. But then I decided to stay in the Army, and I raised my hand, and that was probably the best decision for me because it gave me a new light on the Army, and then it made me see a lot of different things other than what I was seeing.
It made you grow up.
It made me grow up quick.
Yeah, I came in at 17, and I went from 17 to 55 in war. There's no question about it. Yeah. Sir, tell us about the Armor Center. What goes on at the Armor? I mean, tell the audience about, what's so important about the Armor Center?
Sure. Well, absolutely, Sergeant Major. So the Armor School, right? So here we are. We're at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Armor Center. I mean, Armor School.
That's okay. I was in the Armor Center a long time ago, so
that's because I'm old. I say that
right. No, absolutely. I worked for Terry Tucker back in the Armor Center in the day, but we're at the Maneuver Center of Excellence, and within the Maneuver Center of Excellence, right, we have the Armor School and the Infantry School. So in the Armor School, our job really is there's two things that we do. The first is that we train all of our armor crewmen. Whether that's enlisted for our 19 kilo tankers or it's our 19 Delta Scouts. So we train all them through the one station unit training. We also have all the tank mechanic training that's part of the part of the Armor School. Now the Ordnance School runs it, but we have it home here. Just on the other side of the motor pool. That's where all of our tank and Bradley mechanics do all their work. We also train our non-commissioned officers at for our staff sergeants and our sergeant first classes, and then we train our lieutenants. So that's that's the core of what we do. And then we have a little bit about functional leader training. I'll let Sergeant Major talk about the functional leader training.
We have we have 316, which is our lethality brigade, which gives us 22 POIs.
Tell the audience what lethality.
Lethality. Oh, this is a great question. Lethality is the ability to employ and destroy, close with and destroy on the enemy with precision the first time, winning the first battle. And that's my belief of what I see you lethality as. And it's a two-part aspect. It's understanding and being proficient on your platform and in your skill craft, and also understanding how to train and manage that and bringing it together to create the lethality of what we do as a armored force and as an Army. SMA. But I'll jump back to you. I think I got it right.
No, jump back to what his question. I'm going to ask you the same thing.
316 has 20 POIs, which covers everything from Master Gunner, Abrams Master Gunner, to Bradley Master Gunner, all the way down to combatants. So everything from 0 to 5,000 meters of lethality of how to close with and destroy on an enemy, that POI is covered through 316.
Wow. Yeah.
But, and the other thing 316 does that's unique is it's where we train our scout leaders course and our cavalry leaders course. Mm-hmm. And so for our leaders, that school provides that foundational training for us to enable reconnaissance and security throughout the Army. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about 316 is when you look at things, you know, like 316 builds readiness for our Army and its brigade combat teams. It's the one-stop shopping for readiness. Direct readiness to all of our brigade combat teams. It's a pretty big mission.
It sounds like a big mission. What's the priorities for the armor school?
Sure. So, you know, in number one, in very general terms, you know, before jumping into like, you know, I'm jumping into like army language or something like that.
Into whatever you want to do.
Yeah. So it's really about creating, experts at Echelon. That's what we really want. We want to create experts at Echelon. We want to be able to have the privates that are ready to add value the moment they join the formation. Mm-hmm. So some things that we're looking at, you know, are increasing the amount of maintenance training that our privates are getting, you know, so that they can go and they can do, you know, some 10-level maintenance tasks by themselves. The other thing that we're looking for out of our privates is to license them when they come out of OSINT. You know, so I mean, as a brigade, you know, as a battalion or a company commander out there, wouldn't it be nice if your 19 deltas and your 19 kilos come to your unit already licensed and trained? So that's an example of like, how do we build that expertise at the private level?
Do you think a private that comes out of OSINT is an expert in any way?
So I think in an expert, no, but they can be the best they can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And so that's kind of, you know, when we look about experts, that's why we talk about expertise at Echelon. And we want them to be the best they can be. We want privates to do private things well in their organization that they're primed and ready to follow that direction of their non-commissioned officers. And likewise for lieutenants, like a lot of jokes always about lieutenants, right? But you know, first off, you know, lieutenants are combat leaders.
There's always
jokes about brigadier generals too. You know, I hear that.
We don't want to hear that one.
We hear that one every day. Yeah. But fact of the matter is our lieutenants are expected to be combat leaders the day they join the platoon, period, right? They're combat leaders on day one. And so we have to provide them all of those skills so they immediately can add value, right, and jump into their platoon. That way they're primed and ready to listen to the advice of their platoon sergeant to help them kind of move them to the next level. Yeah. So we have a strategy, right? So throughout the Army, you know, everyone's familiar with Army Futures Command and the Chief Staff of the Army and the Secretary of Army's modernization priorities and signature systems. And so a lot of that is based off of materiel, like next generation, you know, the OMFV or the next generation aircraft or the next generation, you know, the squad weapon. What we're looking at now is, so how do we develop the person, right? So we have materiel that we're getting ready to, you know, bring into the Army, but how do we now adapt for like the future and how do we change how we train and develop leaders going into the Army of 2030? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so that strategy of leader development, training, and what we're calling it standardization through 2030 is something that's really important to us right now because we have to adapt and we have to get better moving into the future.
Yeah.
And Esme, I would like to hit on that one too, especially the training.
You can hit on all of them.
The training portion of that one, you know, we ask ourselves about, you asked about, is a private an expert? No, a private isn't. But we can give you a proficient, competent private that you can train to become an expert and mastery of skills. That's one thing that we're really driving at. And based on the training, where we're getting at is, what if I gave you a private that comes straight out of basic training and they are able to do PMCS by themselves? Because they've received 22 extra hours of this PMCS on this vehicle. So now they are competent and they have the courage to do this by themselves. And, you know, as we say, in absence of orders, you do things on your own, right? Now I've given you this competent soldier who all you got to do is add to his or her resiliency, and they're going to be that soldier that we're looking for to build that expertise and mastery of what we want to get after. And the leader development, hey, we're looking at all things of, look, redesigning our POIs for our PME, you know, adding the basic skills of master gunnery to every PME, officer and enlisted. These things will make us that that competent armor officer and non-commissioned officer and also a soldier. So I believe that the way we're getting after it is the best way forward.
Well, you know, I used to tell people that somebody asked me one time, when do you think he was a good sergeant? I was a good sergeant when I made staff sergeant. I was a good staff sergeant when I made sergeant first class. When you make the next step up there, I always think you get a little more proficient. Sergeant Major, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and so how does that affect the changes within the Army community?
ASMA, and I said it, it affects changes by redeveloping our POI, Program of Instructions, right? Especially in our PME. So what we're doing is readjusting the PME to make it go fluid, and these the soldiers that attend these PME will come out understanding what we're looking at fighting, because we got rid of what we didn't get rid of, but we just shifted our coin operation thought process to the right. It's still there, a part of it, but it's a later on after effect. Now we're trying to drive towards the large scale combat operations where a soldier becomes resilient, adaptive, and a critical thinker, which is helping us out. And I think it will advance us further as we look further out.
Yeah, I used to tell people you got to focus on the basics.
Yes.
The basics really that I think really help you. Do you focus on the basics too? I mean,
the foundation. If you don't know the foundation, you can't get anywhere you're going, SMA. And we do focus on what is the foundation. What does a tanker at different echelons need to know? And this is where General Felty talked about standardization. Mm-hmm. As we look at standardization, you know, we look at the impact of back in the days when you used to have to take a test. When I came in the Army, they had a tank commander test that you would have to take.
Yeah.
Even though it's worth promotion points, you know, but it gave us something to focus at and focus in on to make us better and competent in our skill craft. Because there were people that went out there fail.
We're not the biggest army. What's the biggest difference in our army than all the rest of them? I think it's China, India, or Pakistan. I'm not sure what the second is, but we're the third largest army in the world. What's the difference in our army and everybody else?
So I think it's two things. You know, first and foremost, it's our non-commissioned officer.
I love that.
First and foremost, right? Yeah. Son of an NCO, right?
There
I wonder, you know, where it comes from, right? But first and foremost, that's our secret sauce, right?
Yeah.
That's what enables us to be, you know, the best army in the world and to do the things that we want to do. And those things that we want to do is execute combined arms.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you look at, we've read a lot about this, you know, in the social media and the news world, but that's, and we talk about, you know, moving forward and what we're focusing on our PME and our courses right now, it's really back to large scale ground combat operations. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? It's about integrating all arms into the fight. How do we fight as combined arms, you know, combined arms NCOs and combined arms leaders? You know, as a tanker, I've got to know how to employ the infantry. I got to know how to employ aviation. I got to know how to employ the artillery. I got to employ all of those arms so that I can achieve, you know, devastating effects on the enemy. And that's hard,
yep.
You know, but that our application of the combined arms really is I think that second thing that makes us, you know, the best army.
Sergeant Major, same question.
ASMA, you know, I hate, you know, not to brag and boast, but I do 100% believe that it's the non-commissioned officer corps that drives.
I believe
it. And because of the non-commissioned officer corps, we are able to develop the individual leaders. And by developing those individual leaders, we create critical thinkers who are able to step up and fill voids where you have in other armies. They don't have that ability to step up and fill voids if there's a loss. So our critical thinking and our capabilities of doing that. Second of all, I do believe that we do use we are best at our platform and our equipment mastery than any other army. I think we invest into our soldiers and our leaders to use our platforms and our equipment better than any other army in the world.
Yeah.
And another shout out too, right? Because I think any armored, you know, leader, it's a shout out to our sustainment community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes us. Why, especially the armored force, what enables us to do what we do on the battlefield is because of the great backbone of our support and sustainers that we have. I mean, without them, I mean, you know, we'd run out of gas, we'd run out of bullets, and we wouldn't be able to do the things that we do on the battlefield. Yeah,
so we're talking with the Commandant, Brigadier General Thomas Felty, and Command Sergeant Major Levine Jackson of the U.S. Army Armor School. I'll make sure I say that. And you're watching Your Next Mission podcast live with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major Army. And if you'd like to reach out to me, you can do that by texting me at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Or you can leave me a comment on all my social media channels. I never thought I'd ever say anything like that you're watching right now. So I think it'd be fun. Also, if you're enjoying this live broadcast from Fort Benning on YouTube, please like us. click on that subscribe button below. Click on that. Join the team. Be on the Sergeant Major of the Army's team, and let's try to make a difference in our country. There's no question. We're giving away great new Your Next Mission t-shirts to the next 20 subscribers to on our YouTube channel. So please leave a message on that comment section down there, and I'll reach back out to you. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. Sir, let's talk about the Sullivan Cup. Tell us one minute, how did it start, and tell me a little bit about the competition.
Yeah, sure. So the Sullivan Cup, right, our first Sullivan Cup took place in 2012. And it's when the Armor School moved from Fort Knox to...
I was a Fort Knox guy. I stayed about 10 years.
Yeah, so it made the move. And it was actually now Lieutenant General Ted Martin that kind of brought back the Sullivan Cup. So the Sullivan Cup, in many ways, is a descendant of the Canadian Army Trophy competition. Part of our CAT team. And for those out there that aren't familiar with the CAT team, and that was a, again, the Canadian Army Trophy, that was a competition, a tank competition among our NATO allies that was all about who is the most lethal tank in the NATO.
Me.
Right? It was you, Sergeant Major?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about. But you know, we lost that for a while, yeah. Right? And we did it for a little bit in the 90s and in the early 90s, and then it kind of faded. And then as we began to break a little bit out of our back-to-back deployments in 2012 or so, we brought back the Sullivan Cup, named after Gordon Sullivan, of course, one of our best ever tankers, former chief of staff of the Army. General Sullivan.
Absolutely.
Sergeant Major. So it's a tank competition, and so the idea of this is to test, right, our best tank crews, right, and to see who is the best tank crew in the United States Army. But it's also an opportunity for us as the Armor School to kind of do a check on learning and to see what are the trends throughout the forces, so that we can see everyone in one place, we can assess, and then we can overall attempt to make it a little bit better. Now this year is a little different, we have a couple of firsts this year. I think we have three firsts that I'm aware of this year. You know, the first thing is we brought Bradleys to the competition. So we have our 19 Deltas that crew our Bradleys, and the Bradleys are now part of this competition, right? They've been out there, they haven't had a competition, and I think this is a great place and a great honor, to honor General Sullivan and to bring that platform into, because it's really about platform lethality, and now we have our tanks and our Bradleys. The second first is this is the first time since we integrated women into the combat arms in 2016, we have women crew members.
Oh, wow.
And they're doing a great job.
All women crews?
Nope. We don't have all. They're part
of
the crews.
That's the way it should be.
Yep. They're part of the crews, and long overdue. And they're just, again, they're just proving to everybody, of course, what we knew they could do along, and which is, being experts at their craft. And then the third, third first for this competition is we've got the new M1A2 V3 SEP. And so we have 1st Cav Division that's shooting the, our newest tank that we have in our inventory.
Being an old guy, one day I want to come up here and shoot a tank again. I love shooting tanks, that's for sure.
Right. Absolutely.
Hey, Sergeant Major, tell me. Do soldiers like this competition? Or are they afraid of it? Or
SMA, I tell you, they're so excited about it. Every one of those 12 crews down there believe that they and know in their heart that they are the best of the best tank crews and Bradley crews. So they're excited because, they tell me day in and out. And I tell you, before I came up here, one of the female drivers on the Bradley crew, she came to me and said, "Hey, Sergeant Major, guess what? No matter what, I am one of the 5 best tank crews in the Bradley crews in the United States Army." And I could do nothing but smile. And it brought joy to my heart that she has so much pride in herself and what her crew can do and her capabilities. I think she even told me that they were going to win, but I'm all in. She's a good driver. But I tell you, they are happy. And every division that has a Bradley and tank crew involved in it, they are cheering and voting and yelling on all our social media platforms, and they're getting out there. So I believe 100% they're happy.
Yeah. I got to tell you something. I started the Soldier Initiative of the Year program for the Army. In my lifetime, I like competition. Do you think competition makes people better?
I think competition breeds greatness. I think it breeds greatness. It brings out the inner part of you that says that I must win. When all else fails, you pull out the inner part of you as a human being and said that I must win. And I totally believe that. And maybe that's just my...
Well, I had Thai tank in two of the units that I was in throughout my military career when I was a younger staff sergeant, first class. And I always wanted to shoot against somebody else because I wanted to see if I was the best of the best. And I never got a chance to do that.
But iron sharpens iron, right, Sir? Maybe
that's right.
It absolutely brings out the best.
Well, there's no second best in our profession. No, that's right. For sure. Sir, what's the future look like for the armor community?
Yeah, so we have
hopefully it's good.
It is good, right? Yeah. And so, you know, contrary to a lot of people's, you know, belief, you know, the tank is not quite dead yet, right? And there's a lot of, you see that in a lot of social media. And the good news is there are a lot of articles out there that provide, you know, the poignant counterpoints. And the fact of the matter is, like, there is always going to be, you know, a requirement for mobile protected firepower, and the tank is it. The tank changes the odds. You know, in any combined arms fight, when you bring a tank to the fight, it's changing the odds in your favor. And so it's a bright future. So things that we've got on the agenda, you know, what we've got on you know, going forward right now. So we're going through a lot of organizational changes, and just recently, fresh off the press as of last week, the Army just approved the new MOS, which is 19 Charlie, and that's going to be a Bradley Fighting Vehicle Crewman, specifically for our mechanized infantry companies. And so that's a big step. And the whole idea is to put professionals in every single Bradley turret. Mm-hmm. True professionals that are experts and eventually masters of their craft. And so we're going to see that in late 24 is when we're going to start OSINT. And the other reason that's important is we move on the materiel side. We know that we're going to have the next generation combat vehicle and the optionally manned fighting vehicle.
Are you working on the new vehicle now?
So General Kaufman is with Army Futures Command. Yeah. He is in the process of competing different designs in the acquisition process, and so he's fully moving forward in this, and it's going to be this is going to be a much more capable vehicle than we have right now.
A lighter vehicle, or
I think a lot of the different dimensions and things like that are still like kind of getting worked out as our industry partners are working.
Fort Benning heat's wearing me down, right?
No, it's
go ahead.
It's good. It is warm.
It's go ahead, sir.
Okay, yeah, but we are. Yeah, but it is. It's going to be a much more capable vehicle, and really, a lot of it is going to be the technology that we bring to bear. All the modern technology that we have, you know, we're going to bring to bear into this vehicle, and it's going to be an extremely lethal platform. But it's going to be pretty complicated too, which is why we need professionals, you know, inside the turret, someone who knows what they're doing and are experts and are well trained on it. So that's part of it with kind of on the materiel side. There's going to be a decision on the next generation tank that'll be, over the next couple of years.
Are they going to do away with the four-man crew, go to a three? I've always heard that.
Yeah, so one of the things on the Bradley, not necessarily on the tank yet, that decision I think is still pending, you know, with our Army leadership. We haven't identified that requirement yet. But for our optionally manned fighting vehicle, you know, that replaced the Bradley, you know, they're looking at a two-person crew.
A driver and a TC?
A driver and a vehicle commander. But what's going to enable them is all this technology. So they're going to automate a ton of the things that you would do, that would take extra people. We're going to have technology that's going to help us through that. Now there'll be a third person. We think there's going to be like another crew station, but in the end, we're going to automate a lot of those things that would require an additional person.
You know, one thing I just made a think of. One of the things that always scares me about you realize when you're in a fight, somebody's going to get hit.
Right.
And when you get hit, what happens to all that technology and equipment?
Yeah.
Is it going to break down? Is it going to continue to work? And do they have a secondary system that you can use to continue to fight?
I think this is all the stuff that we're going to, you know, again, we're in the initial design categories right now, and I know all the experts are, these are all things that they're taking into consideration. So I'm certain that when the Army decides on what the system is, they're going to take all that into account. Because in the end, you got to be able to fight off this vehicle, and that vehicle's got to be survivable. And we talk about survivability, you know, at least with the, you know, American vehicles, we talk about survivability for our crews, like our crews have to survive, but our weapon system has to survive too.
Yeah.
Right? We've got to be able to fight it to the end. So I know that is something that we're going to incorporate. But again, that's an Army Futures Command kind of question.
Well, you may be there working on that in a couple of years. You never know.
Could be, Sergeant Major.
Sergeant Major, you want to add anything to that? The future thing?
Sir, I agree with everything the Commandant said on that one.
Well, I guess the question would be the future for the non-commissioned officer according to the Army community. Is there any kind of changes? I mean, along with the tank,
so
too.
I think the biggest thing with us is talent management. As we start to look at talent management and how we place talent management across the force, you know, as we see the force growing and needing the aspect and knowledge of the armor corps, right, we're going to look at talent management. And that talent management will help drive the way that we develop systems, right, and getting more involved into the development of systems, as I see from the armor from the non-commissioned officer side. I think that is very key for us right now, and that's one thing that we're looking at, ensuring that we have the non-commissioned officers there to help guide those thought processes.
Yeah. And just one thing we're actually exploring too with this standardization and training model, right? So we're looking at changing the way we train and certify our tank crews to mirror that of aviation. Right, so we're going to try to mirror aviation in terms of how we progress through a series of different readiness levels. But with our NCOs, how this will impact things is that we think there might be space where some of our master gunners become warrant officers.
And so that
would be a big change. We wouldn't, obviously, we would keep some master gunners as NCOs because we want some master gunners to be the sergeant major in the Army one day.
Yeah.
You know, but then we also want to provide a space where they can really, really be technical experts and stay in that position for a long time. And so that's something that, you know, we are actively exploring right now.
You know, we talked about warrant officers in the Army Committee for years. It really, and so I don't think it's a bad idea. And I think probably in the future, but you got to continue to change.
Yes.
Got to continue to grow and stuff. Well, first of all, let me say that I've enjoyed talking to you guys today, and you're a wealth of knowledge. Both of you, and you're doing a tremendous job, I know, at the Armor School right here, and I just really appreciate it. Any final thoughts, anything you want to make sure you tell the audience that you want to say? Sergeant, I'm gonna start with a Sergeant Major right here.
Hey, so SMA, I would like to say—
You got a couple minutes to talk for 2 minutes.
One thing I would like to say is in the Armor community, I would like to say this. Know who you are. You are the armor community. You are always at the friction point of what the United States wants us to be at. You are there to deter and stop anything from coming forward. So you are reliable and you are the deciding factor of all things combat. And that's one thing I'll leave it with.
There you go. Sir, about yourself.
Yeah, just, you know, the point that I would leave with is, we are a great Army, and we've got, in the Armor Corps, we've got to be good at fighting, but we also have to be good at maintaining, and then we got to be good at taking care of our people.
Yeah.
You know, because it really is, it's the people of the Armor Corps that's what gives us that distinct advantage, and we just need to, keep on taking care of our people.
You couldn't be right on it. It's always about people. It's always about taking care of people. You can get different equipment. You can do all this different, but the people, as long as you're taking care of the people, you'll make things happen there. Thanks to Brigadier General Thomas Felty and Command Sergeant Major Jackson. I'm Jack Abdulli, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been watching live stream of Your Next Mission podcast. And please stick around. Our Your Next Mission podcast, and we're going to talk to a couple more great leaders here in a few minutes. And I want you to stick around. Don't go anywhere. And really, thanks for watching. But please stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're watching a Your Next Mission live stream, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at PurdueGlobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and we've been having a great time here today, and I appreciate it. We have some great soldiers today, Sergeant Trevon Craig from the 194th, and Sergeant Sorensen. Thank you very much. I guess you work in metal backfield, or metal illness, I guess it is.
Yes, I'm here.
Tell me, before we get started here a little bit, can you tell me just a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Sergeant Major. So I've been in the Army almost 9 years now. I still consider myself pretty young in the military, working amongst some of my peers. I started out at Fort Campbell in the 86th Cache, which I don't think is there anymore. We've switched kind of roles. From there, I went to Fort Stewart, working both in 2nd Brigade's outpatient clinic as an NCOIC, trying to run that clinic, and then got moved into the main hospital in the inpatient ward. So I've kind of worked both sides of the house, both the quick kind of come see us, and then the other one where you're kind of with us for a little bit. From there, I went to the schoolhouse, so I was training all our future leaders and training our incoming 68 X-rays who will hopefully one day replace me and make a better Army. And then from there, now I'm here working at the Military Advisor Training Academy down on Kelly Hill, just up the road.
Hey, how about yourself? Can you tell a little about yourself?
My name is Senior Drill Sergeant Craig. So I joined the Army at 22. I grew up on a small farm in Kentucky. Liked what I was doing, so I continued on. I'm at 15 years now. A wife and two kids. I'm currently serving as the 194th Armored Brigade Senior Drill Sergeant. So
that's about it, huh?
That's about it, Sergeant Major.
You guys don't clam up on me now. Tell me a little bit about yourself here.
I've served in 194th Armored Brigade for 7 years. I've been in quite a few units, actually, for the amount of time I've been in. I was with 1st Brigade, 3rd ID at Fort Hood, Texas, where we stood them up, and then we broke them down and did a unit move to Fort Knox, Kentucky, where we stood them up again. I did 2 deployments with them. Then from there, I moved to Fort Benning, where I was a cavalry instructor. Spent 4 years here instructing trainees, then moved on to 2CR in Vilsack, Germany. And after Vilsack, Germany, I received drill sergeant orders and returned here to train trainees once again.
Well, tell me a little bit about your jobs. You both have totally different jobs, so tell me about your job first. Okay.
My job, I mentor the drill sergeants of the brigade. So 194th Armored Brigade has...
Tell people what mentoring is, I guess. I'm sure they know what it is. Go ahead.
Just talking to them, helping with daily struggles, anything they might have a challenge with, something roadblock they might hit that they don't know how to get past, that maybe my experience or the entities that I have at my disposal can help them overcome.
Yeah. So tell me a day for you, Sergeant Sergeant. What's your day look like each day?
It varies, Sergeant Major. So based off the Military Advisor Training Academy and the course we teach, the Combat Advisor Training Course, we're broken up into 4 different blocks. So I work with Block 1. It's a 2-week block. For the first week, typically we're teaching mission analysis, teaching what type of assessments you need to do on our foreign counterparts and what you're looking to better their military because they've asked us to come and assist them in some way. The second week, we are typically focused on more of a cultural aspect, so making sure we don't proverbially stick our own foot in our mouth and making sure that the way we do things is in a good conjuncture with the way they may do things, because everyone has their own style of doing things. So our military may be very abrupt and bottom line up front. We like very things to be very poignant. They may be a more story-based culture, so we're teaching kind of how to navigate that field and issue you may run across as a military advisor.
Yeah, tell me about behavior health. What, you know, so a layman understands exactly what that is.
So that's a very broad question. Behavior health covers so many different fields. It depends on kind of where you're looking at. The bottom line, behavioral health is how you are mentally. Are you mentally healthy? And this comes from just dealing with pressures coming from stress. Are you able to have healthy outlets to kind of navigate that stress? So if you come off of our job, which can be very stressful, we have a lot of tasks and things we have to do on a daily. Are you able to mentally handle that to where you don't snap in a sense? And so that deals with our mental health as far as, are we taking time for ourselves? Are we talking to people if we need to talk to them? Are we getting enough sleep? It's a very broad field with many different facets that you can go down.
Yeah. You know, when I was on active duty, I guess we talked about mental illness, but most people really didn't talk too much about it because I think they was concerned about whether or not they'd be promoted if they brought the issue up about mental illness. Can you tell me why they have, is there more emphasis now placed on mental illness within the Army?
Sorry, Major, I don't think there's really too much more of an emphasis.
Yeah.
I think we're being brought more to the light than we were. We've kind of gotten away from being hidden in hospitals and clinics, and we're being put more into units. So it's no longer, oh, I got to go see this random staff sergeant in a clinic. It's more of, oh, now I'm talking to Staff Sergeant Sorensen, and we go out more to the troops now. We're no longer hidden away. So we'll go out into a motor pool, such as the one we're in, and do walkabouts and just say, hey, how are you guys doing? You know, are there any issues? Do you want to talk to anything? If not, hey, this is where I'm at. So
are you doing what leaders should be doing, I guess?
I would say so, but just to a different capacity. The military's move into, we're not just focused on physicality where can you run, can you push up and sit up? We're now worried more of, are you also eating correctly? You know, we're not waking up and downing 8 Red Bulls in a day. Are you getting enough sleep? You know, we don't want them to leave at, you know, 2200, 2300 and say, hey, be back for PT at 05. You know, we're trying to look at different assets. So I wouldn't say we're necessarily taking over a leader's role. We're just looking at a different facet and making sure that it's done in a healthy manner.
Yeah, so how about yourself? Mental, you know, do you work with people that have those kind of issues with the, within the drill sergeant community?
Absolutely, Sergeant Major. So drill sergeant is a very demanding, very stressful job. It requires a lot of effort and a lot of time. Time is a big part of it. And just that amount of time under stress, it does cause mental strain. And the mental health being embedded with the units is helping to deal with that strain because it makes it more accessible to the drill sergeant.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are knowing our show, Your Next Mission, our focus this year is mental illness. And that's our all focus for the entire year. As leaders, is there challenges facing you guys with that kind of issue as far as mental illness and maybe even suicide prevention, I guess?
There is, Sergeant Major. There is. It's been viewed as a stigma. It was viewed not by the Army, but as the population, as the general population. They thought it was a stigma. They thought it was a sign of weakness. Now we're moving more towards a transition where we're trying to get the soldiers to understand that you don't only train your body, you also have to train your mind.
Yeah.
And mental health is part of that.
Yeah. How about yourself? So I'm going to add anything to that.
I would say, yeah, the stigma was always there. We were kind of seen as that, once you come to us, you know, there's that perception of being weak, right? I should be the toughest, the best. I should be able to take care of myself. And sometimes that's not the case. And I'll say for the vast majority of soldiers I have come through my clinic, one of the first things you'll hear is, I never thought I'd be here, or I never thought I'd have to talk. And sometimes that's all you need, is just to talk to somebody. We're not trying to diagnose you. We're not trying to say you have these issues or those issues. Sometimes you just got to get stuff out. So the stigma is definitely getting less and less, and I've been seeing more leaders on a top side. I've had sergeant majors who will tell their formations in Liverpool, like, hey, I have a behavioral health appointment in 5 minutes, to say, like, look, I'm not afraid to go talk, get out there and, you know, make sure I'm mentally okay. So, you know, it's that changing Army, right? It's that stigma we had versus now we're trying to see that it's not that big a deal to go talk to somebody.
Well, I think a long time ago people thought it was, if you brought up things like that, it'd affect your promotion. I guess I don't know if that's true or not. Do you think
it's
still true?
It's not. No, it's non-punitive. If you come to see us, even if you're command directed, it's non-punitive. The only thing that we could ever tell anybody is if you were a direct harm to either yourself or somebody else. That's about the only time where we have to step outside the office and say, all right, hey, you've got to have to watch this individual. Other than that, if you come talk to us, it's between you and us. And with all the health laws, with HIPAA, which is your Health Information Protection Acts, and identifiable information, like, we can't share any of that. And we can actually be penalized and brought under charges if we do so. So that your personal information, your issues, anything like that that you talk to us about are highly regarded. Like, we're not just blasting you out on any situation and going to tell all your buddies.
Yeah. Does social media have anything to do with that? A lot of now, everything you do is on social media. Does that affect their behavior in any way, or good or bad? I guess maybe probably bad in some cases.
I mean, Sergeant Major, like anything else, it's based off the individual. Some put a lot of stock into their media presence. Others, you'll talk to leaders, they barely have a phone. They still like their old Cricket phone. They don't have flip phones, smartphones, whatever.
My wife just got a new iPhone a couple months ago. She didn't want a new one either, but go ahead.
So it just depends. Some really, you know, that's the generation we're in. We're a very tech-heavy generation. It's something that the military is constantly adjusting. We're having to worry about our Facebook, our Twitter. TikTok is always the latest one now. And it just...
Are you on TikTok?
I am not. I haven't Sorry. Crossed that bridge
No,
yet.
I'm not, Sergeant Major. No.
I am. Go ahead.
I crossed to Facebook, and that's where I stopped. I don't have a Twitter. I don't have a, you know, Instagram or anything like that. It's the wife does all that for me.
Do you watch news?
I do watch news.
I do watch the news, Sergeant Major.
Yeah, I watch news all the time, and I think in some cases that's sort of a downfall for a lot of people. We're talking with Sergeant First Class Trevin Craig from the 194th Armor Brigade, Senior Drill Sergeant and Staff Sergeant Christopher Sorensen. I want to make sure I don't mess your name up right there. Health Technician at the Military Advisor Training Academy. You're watching Your Next Mission podcast live with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And if you like this, if you'd like to, reach out to me. You can call me or text me at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Or you can, you know, or send me a comment on social media. I never thought I'd ever say anything like that on all of my social media channels. And I'll actually get back to you. Also, if you're enjoying this live broadcast from Fort Benning on YouTube, please hit us, like us, hit that subscribe button below. You know, I'd love to build a bigger team. As I said throughout the show, we're giving away these great Your Next Mission t-shirts to the next 20 subscribers on YouTube channel. So don't forget, please leave me a message or comment so I know how to get a hold of you or reach out to you, I guess. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. Sergeant Sorensen, let's discuss suicide prevention. I know that you always read on everything that there's 22 people, 22 veterans a day that commit suicide. What about that?
So that study was, it's kind of an old study. That's 22 was the number that's kind of been latched on. So it does fluctuate, sometimes for the worse, sometimes for a little better. But in reality, one is too many. Yeah. So, I mean, if it was, you know, one a day, that's still too many. So suicide prevention, some soldiers take it as, hey, it would never happen to me. But you'd be surprised some of the ones that it does. And unfortunately, I have seen it in the military. I've seen everything from privates to captains. Typically, our focus group, our youngest, unfortunately, are 18 to 24-year-olds. And when you look in the military and you look at a breakdown of how many soldiers we have in that category, that's a big chunk of the military. And that normally comes from the ones who come right out of high school. When you look at it, this is their first big job. This is the first time they're away from parents, friends. A lot of them may not have ever left their hometown. So this is their first major adjustment issue. And that's usually where we see a lot of the isolation start coming in, where they stick to themselves because they don't know anybody. They're in a new location. They've been thrown in the barracks. The mentality of, I don't know who to go to, is kind of how we're trying to break that, you know, show that not only is behavioral health we're here, but we have, you know, family life counselors. You can talk to your instructors or drills. You're supposed to, you know, there's always our open door policies with our first sergeants, our commanders, items like that. So, I mean, it's still a pretty prevalent thing that unfortunately is still in our military.
Yeah, how about you, Sergeant Craig?
It's still very, very much a thing that we deal with on a daily basis, Sergeant Major, especially here at Fort Benning, being in the training community. Trainees have a very, very difficult time adjusting, and it starts with the drill sergeant. And the drill sergeant being better trained in how to mitigate those things and how to talk to the soldiers. And the biggest thing is to know your soldiers. Yeah. Know your soldiers and make sure you're talking to them. Talking to the trainees, even though they're training, it's a drill sergeant trainee relationship, there's still that NCO behind the drill sergeant hat. There's an NCO that has to put on that drill sergeant hat for there to be a drill sergeant.
Sure.
And that NCO, that's the NCO that comes out. When they talk to the trainees, they know them, they get to know them. And so we've transitioned the way drill sergeants conduct themselves a little bit, I'm sure, from the time when you were a drill sergeant major.
It wasn't that long ago. Yeah. Wait a minute. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, it was a long time ago. I was a drill sergeant, 67, 68, and 71 to 73. And in fact, one of the questions I asked a couple of people a few minutes ago about has training changed a lot since they came into service? How about yourself? Has training, has basic training or AIT changed a lot since you came in?
It has changed completely, Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
Changed completely. It's a different approach on how we train. I was very fortunate. I had phenomenal drill sergeants. I don't think that's someone that you ever forget, your drill sergeant. I'm sure you still remember yours. And
Drill Sergeant Lewis.
Sergeant Sorensen still remembers his as well.
All three of them.
They've changed it where the drill sergeant is more of a leader, more of the embodiment of a leader, more of what a non-commissioned officer is just day in and day out. The drill sergeant is a title that's added because they're training someone in a training environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Sergeant? I've got off suicide, but I don't want to get off. But how about you? You think the training's changed a little bit? And do you think that affects suicide prevention in any way? I mean, because of the training. Think it's either too easy or not hard enough or whatever. And I guess the other thing is that a lot of people come into service with already having issues. That's true, I guess.
That's true. And like I said, behavioral health is so broad. And so when we say you have issues, we're not saying you necessarily have a diagnosis already. You could have tendencies to different different issues, whether it's behavioral, mental, however you want to spin it. So, and that's fine, right? It's when it starts impacting your life that really becomes an issue. So if we can get you the training you need, if we can put that leadership figure in front of you and that's what helps you, then cool, that's what helps you. If not, then that's kind of where behavioral health comes in. If you need to come see us and we can maybe more fine-tune the help you need. As far as training becoming easier or harder, like we said, your time through is vastly different than my time through. My time through is different than, you know, Sergeant here's time through, and even looking at the cats coming through nowadays. So I wouldn't say easier or harder. It's when you look at what the problems are. The issues I had coming in my generation are different than what's coming through now. Like there's different problems that I never had to face that younger generation soldiers now might have to. So younger, easier, harder, that's all relative, yeah. In a grander sense, Sergeant Major.
Yeah. What would you think would be the number one issue for a young soldier? I'll probably ask both you guys, a young soldier coming into service. What's the biggest issue, biggest top three issues that you see soldiers talking to you and then talking to you? That
Typically the ones coming through is it's always the adjustment. Like Drill Sergeant said, and kind of what I said, is that this is their first time on their own. They may have always been with mom and dad or around friends, around family, and then here we are taking you potentially across country to a new environment, putting you in a room. Now you have a roommate you've never met before, or you're in a bay with, you know, 53, 54 other soldiers who you have no initial connection with. Mm-hmm. So that initial adjustment of, hey, how do I get myself in the soldier mindset is always the, I would say, the number one toughest that we see in an AIT and basic training environment for initial soldiers. After that, it's usually finance, which I'm sure Drill Sergeant is going to, you know, Drill Sergeant already knows. And finance is another one a lot of people come to us. The stress of, well, I've never had to worry about all my bills. I've never had to worry about my car payment, my phone payment. How am I feeding myself? Did I just go spend my entire paycheck on a new pair of shoes? And now I'm eating Top Ramen for the next, you know, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So finance is always another one. And then past that, I'd say those are the top two. And after that, it kind of depends on who you are. Is it family issues, relationship issues, are the other two really big ones, either missing family or that spousal boyfriend, girlfriend relationships are normally up there in the top three, I would say.
Yeah. Sergeant Cram, what's your thought?
I would say number one, Sergeant Major, would be isolation.
Isolation.
The younger generation is so connected. They know everything when it happens.
Now, somebody told me the other day they get their cell phone on Wednesdays and Saturdays and Sundays or something like that.
It depends on the training unit, but yes, yeah. Sergeant Major. They get more phone time definitely than we got when I went through. But still, it's just that disconnect. I think it causes a feeling of isolation just because the way society is. It's so connected. They know about everything right when it happens. And then they get here and you've got some crazy guy yelling at you or some drill sergeant getting on you and you don't know what's going on and it's confusion. So and they're just kind of not used to that. And then the number two, I think would be after the isolation, it would be the responsibility. I know when I graduated high school, I thought I knew what responsibility was and I had no clue. And I think that's something that'll never change. And they adjust to having that responsibility because now they're not working a job, they're in a profession. Yeah. They've joined a profession and a lot of them at a very young age, right out of high school. So I think that's a very big shock for them. And the last one is, I'll go back to isolation, Sergeant Major. I think the technological advances allows them to be more of a loner. And now they're put in, they have to be a team. They have to, it takes more than one person. An army is not a singular person.
Yeah.
It's a group of people driving towards a normal goal, a common goal. So
I can't agree with you more. If you was a chief of staff or sergeant major in the Army, both of you, what's the number one thing that you would change in the Army? But you can be a chief and then you can be the sergeant major in the Army. Go ahead.
that's always tough, Sergeant Major. There's so many
things.
Most
people say they want more money.
I mean, the money's always great. I think my biggest change would just be the connectivity. Kind of what I was alluding to with that first time being alone, Drill Sergeant was alluding to with the isolation is, we get so wrapped up in our own lives, hiding to ourselves, and it's not just our junior soldiers, it's our leaders as well. We do that. Yes, we're a soldier 24 hours, but at the end of the day, I go home and I may not think about my left or right battle. And sometimes it's just getting that better connection where even at a upper level, we're not isolated. So getting our juniors more involved. I know we have things like the single soldier programs, but just getting them out of their room.
A single soldier's quality of life, I guess it is. Boss, is that what
you're talking about? It's the BOSS program, which is just your single soldiers get together, so they're not in their room. But just making the military more of a cohesive unit. You know, mm-hmm. we're at the end of the day, we're all soldiers, whether it's drill sergeant hat, campaign hat. If we're in a beret, a soldier is a soldier. And so whether it's your most junior level to your upper leadership, just getting us to be cohesive like that.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Sergeant Crack? King for the day and the chief of staff. Well, you can be the sergeant major of the army or the chief of staff. Which one do you want to be?
Believe it or not, Sergeant Major, I would kind of follow in your footsteps, and I would change the NCO and Soldier of the Army program to involve NATO. To know, do we have the best soldier? Do we actually have the best soldier among our partners? So,
you want to compete with him?
I would want a competition for a NATO competition with all of our allies to see who has the best soldier.
So, what kind of competition would you set up?
It would have to be a mixture of things, Sergeant Major. So it would have
shooting weapons, I guess, first aid, PT. I mean,
normal soldier tasks, first aid, PT, RM qualifications, and then we would have to have dual events for a singular thing, just based off of the foreign armies. They use different weapons than we use, so we would have to be able to function on their weapons as well as our weapons.
Yeah,
and that would help with cross training as well, Sergeant Major.
Yeah, how important is family in the military for you guys? I know that you're married because I know your wife. I met you.
Yes, Sergeant Major.
I'm going to start with you on this one.
It's everything, Sergeant Major. It's everything. I don't think anyone puts this uniform on unless they truly believe in a pay it forward business, and that's what family is.
Yeah.
Family is paying it forward. You're building a future generation of your own, the same as we do in the Army. And without them, I couldn't accomplish half the things that I do. So family is everything, Sergeant.
Yeah, that's true. Sergeant, are you married, I guess?
I am. I'm married, got two kids, and I'm in the same boat. Family is everything. A lot of everything I do on a day-to-day basis is for my girls, just to make their life easier than my life. And I'm not saying my life was any harder for my parents, you know, making it for me, but, you know, we're always building the next generation. So whatever I can do to make their lives easier, hopefully it keeps going forward. And, yeah, family is greatly important.
Yeah. Do you get your family involved with everything you do in the military?
A good portion. I keep my girls love hearing about what I do every day. We talk about what our favorite parts of the day were at dinner. They ask about who my soldiers are, who my boss is. They love to know kind of what I do, and they love me being a soldier as much as I love being a soldier. So.
Yeah. You think they're going to military?
One of them, yes, most likely will join. The other one, she's only three, so it's kind of hard. Some days she wants to.
Maybe she's still working it out.
Yeah, some days she wants to be a soldier. Other days she just wants to lay on the floor and watch cartoons. So, you know, it's hard to tell. She's still young.
Yeah, I didn't ask you that question. Do you think your kids would have gone to the military again?
One for sure, Sergeant Major. She will be a senior next year, so she's already made her mind up. She just doesn't know what branch she's going to join, but she does want to join the military, even if it's just for one contract. And the other two, we'll see how they do. So,
when are you going to get out of the service? When do you think you'll retire from the military?
The day that I wake up and I say, that's it. I'm done, Sergeant Major. I don't know when that day is.
How many years do you have now?
I have 15 right now, Sergeant Major.
So you think 25, 30?
I have no clue, Sergeant Major.
No clue?
No clue. It could be 30. It could be 40. It could be 25.
Sergeant.
I plan to stay as long as the Army will keep me, whether it's 25, 30. I mean, eventually my mindset might change because, you know, we say that now and then 2 years later, I'm like, yeah, that's it. I'm out. But I'll stay as long as, you know, as long as I can with my family being military and I growing up as an Army brat, like the Army is all I've known.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine going back in the civilian world as much stuff as, like we said, you see on the news and everything else nowadays, like. I can't do the TikTok thing, so I might as well stay in the military.
You know, that's for sure. Any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience? We got a few minutes left here before we have to wrap it up. Anything you want to tell the audience? I mean, this is I know that you work, you know, on behavior, health and all that stuff Anything you want to share? Maybe something to help somebody? Or
Really is if you need help, get it. You know, mental health is just as important as your physical health. You know, you sprain your ankle, you break a leg, you know, you fall out of a tree, we go see a doctor. So if you're having issues, you're feeling depressed, anxious, whatever, come see us. And if it's not us, go see your chaplain. Go talk to your family life counselor. Go talk to your NCO. Like, just talk to somebody. Because you never know how much that's going to help somebody. And kind of what Drill Sergeant said earlier is, as leaders, we need to be engaging with our soldiers. So if you're a leader, talk to your soldiers, see how they're doing, let know kind of what they're doing, and just, you know, be involved.
Yeah, man. Well, how about yourself? Any?
I actually want to share a story about you, Sergeant Major.
It's a good story.
It is a good story, Sergeant Major. So the last time that we spoke, you had made a comment to me about respect and dignity. And I think as leaders, we don't have enough of subordinates, or people maybe we're not even their leader, actually. Actually letting us know when we make an impact. But you talked of respect and dignity, and it really made me reflect and think of the military you went through. We always think the older times are much, much harder than what's currently going on. And getting older in the military, I think, oh, well, everything they're doing now is easy. But hearing you talk about respect and dignity, that really changed my thought process of how I look at things.
You know, I told people all throughout my military career that I always said I treat everybody the way that they I want them to treat me, and so I respect everybody. And I certainly never tried to talk down to anybody. I always wanted to be who I am. In fact, I tell people all the time, the way I was when I was a Sergeant E5 was the same way I was when I was a Sergeant Major in the Army. I never wanted to change. I think one of the most important things to do is don't change. Don't change who you are each and every day. Because it's important not to change. The soldiers recognize this stuff. I'm going to say thanks to Sergeant First Class Traven Craig and Staff Sergeant Christopher Sorensen for being with us today. And for me personally, it's a big deal. What you talked about, behavior health, is so important because there's a lot of people out there that suffer. Mm-hmm. And being a drill sergeant is one of the most important things that I think anybody can do, because you're training our future. That's you're training right. The people that will go out and fight our nation's wars. You know, and this is tough business, and there's no second best. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been watching live stream of Your Next Mission podcast, and that's about it for us today. We're going to, you know, close up the show, and I want to thank all our guests for being with us today on the podcast. I so appreciate them just for being with us, and I know I had a great time, and I hope they did too. And just my, you know, I always want to leave you with some final thoughts, and one is that, you know, mental illness, it bothers me. It bothers me a great deal. There's so many people out there that think there's nobody there that'll help them. You know, there's 17 million veterans that in some way are attached to each other, that mm-hmm. want to help each other. And so never think that you're alone. Always remember, we're here to help each other each and every day. And I tell people all the time, I'll be a soldier till the day I die, and I'll never change. And I ask you to never change. Do what you can to help our veteran community each and every day, because, you know, a lot of them suffered. I'll also tell you that I didn't tell you, Sergeant Sorensen, but I've suffered from post-traumatic stress for probably 50 or 60 years. And there's been a lot of things that I've had to struggle to get through. And there was always somebody there to help me, to talk to people. So it's important. So God bless each and every one of you. And again, thank you for being here. Before we go, I want to certainly thank our presenting sponsors, Calvary HC, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for what they do each and every day for our veteran community. Thanks for watching. See you on the high ground. Hooah!